Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what is a batea and what is it used for? Tzfat is the oldest and largest town in Israel's Upper Galilee. The Jerusalem Talmud mentions it as one of five elevated spots where fires were lit to announce the new moon and festivals during the Second Temple period from the 4th century BCE until 70 CE. In the 12th century CE, Tzfat was a fortified city in the Crusaders' Kingdom of Jerusalem. There are numerous tombs of sages from the Talmudic period, before the 7th century, in the surrounding area, and it's become a place of annual pilgrimage for Israelis. Amibar lives on a kibbutz in the Upper Galilee. He's a historian and archaeologist with a special interest in the Talmudic period, from the 1st to the 6th century CE, and after the arrival of Jews from Spain beginning in the 14th century. This week, Ami is speaking with us about the importance Tzfat has had in Jewish history since medieval times. Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Ami. Could you first tell us why Tzfat is such a special place? What makes you want to talk with us about it?
Tzfat is one of the four holy cities in Israel where Jews always stayed. Jews never quit. The four cities are Tzfat, Jerusalem, Tiberias, and Hebron. There were always Jews there.
So when did the first people arrive there from Spain, and what did they find?
The first Jews to arrive from Spain to Tzfat were the refugees of the pogroms of 1391. In 1390, when there were pogroms in Sevilla, Zaragoza, and Barcelona, hundreds of thousands, maybe, were killed. Those who survived fled to the north, either to Navarra or to Galicia, and established themselves there in rural areas. Now, the pogroms took place in urban areas, big cities.
So some of them went then to the north of Spain, but some of them went to Tzfat. Where were they from?
The ones from Tzfat were mostly from Catalonia, Aragon, Valencia, and we can tell that, we know that, from the synagogues that were erected later in Tzfat.
Do we have any idea about how many arrived at that time in 1391?
In 1391, maybe something between 1,000 to 2,000 arrived. We have that from historical sources, Turkish sources, in Israel at the time.
What did these people from Spain find in Tzfat when they arrived?
To their surprise, they found a big community, a Jewish community, that was not composed of Sephardic Jews or Ashkenazi Jews, but it was what is called Mustarabim Jews, which are Jews who never left the country. I know this doesn't sound credible, but that is a fact. They were Jews who never left the country, even after the destruction of the Second Temple by the Romans in the year 70. And after the destruction of the Jewish population of Israel by the Romans in the War of Bar Kokhba in 135, there were a few thousand Jews who never left the country, who hid themselves in the mountains of the Galilee or in northern Israel. And those were those living in Tzfat. They spoke and behaved and thought like Arabs, because there was no other language. Some of them knew Hebrew, some of them didn't. but they were uneducated in Jewish wisdom. They didn't have yeshivot. They didn't have means of learning. We don't even know if their Judaism was normative or not. If they were aware of the Talmud, I suppose they were, but we don't have any proof of that. And they were so different from the Sephardic Jews who came from Spain in 1391. The Jews from Spain had yeshivot, that is, they were very well educated in Jewish wisdom.
So these mustarabes, yes. I mean, the word says Arabe, and you said that they had certain, you know, Arab customs in the Arab language. They were practicing Judaism?
Yes. Yes, definitely. They were practicing Jews. They even had their own synagogue in Tzfat, that of the Aryeh. The Aryeh synagogue, there is still standing today. And it is from the 13th century. It's huge. It's massive. Unlike a synagogue. It doesn't look like a synagogue. It looks much like an Arab fortress.
Do they know anything about the kind of Judaism that they were practicing or anything special about that, or we just don't know?
No, we don't know. The one person who most did research on the Mozarabes was Yitzhak Ben Tzvi, the second president of Israel, who, besides being the president and a political person, was a researcher, a historical researcher, and he did research on the Jews, these Jews, Mozarab Jews from Tzfat, Tiberia. And there is a little, very little known town in northern Israel, southern Lebanon, where they also live.
And so it sounds like they didn't really have much communication with Jews in other parts of the world.
That's right, they didn't have, but they were normative Jews.
Okay, so the Sephardim, the people who arrived from Spain, started to arrive in 1391, and you said there were a few thousand. What influence did they have on the local population there?
They were on not being more than 2,000 in the whole country, that we know through the Turkish sources. They did have an influence from the point of view that the Mozarab community started imitating them. I'm talking about going to yeshivot. But the biggest invasion of Sephardic Jews took, of course, not in 1492, but in 1535. The expulsion took place in 1492. The Jews went immediately to the Ottoman Empire, where they were welcomed by the Ottomans. And then something happened that in 1535 impulsed them to move from Greece, where maybe hundreds of thousands, to Tzfat, a few thousands. Just in Tzfat there were a few thousands. And there is the reason that the establishment of the Ottoman Empire took place in 1536.
Can you tell us how the second wave, if you will, of Jews originally from Spain, can you tell us the influence that they had on the population in Tzfat, which I suppose part of the population were the descendants of the ones from 1391 and part were these Mustarabes? Can you speak a little bit to that?
The influence was enormous because if the first wave didn't bring numerically, didn't reach more than 2,000 all over Israel. This time there were more than 5,000 at the beginning living in Tzfat, just in Tzfat. So there were several yeshivot. We knew that they established some 13 synagogues just in Tzfat. So it came to be that Tzfat was the city with the biggest Jewish population at that time in the 16th century, above 10,000, maybe 13,000. And we know exactly where they were from because the synagogues had the names according to the place of press proselytes. There was the synagogue of the Aragonians, the synagogue of the Catalonians, the synagogue of the Tarragoneses. So they were from that part of the world.
And how did they influence Svad economically?
They apparently knew beforehand that Svad has a stream of water, permanent water. That's very rare in Israel to have a stream of water that runs all year round. It's called Nahal Amud or Wadi Amud in Arabic. And it runs less than 1 kilometer away from Tzfat. So that allowed people who wanted to work in carding of the wool to establish bateas. Bateas were those devices made out of wood that allowed for carding the wool. And that's what they did. Along the stream, they established some 32 bateas. That's what they name in Spanish appears literally in Hebrew.
So they were like mills?
Not exactly like mills. It's a batea. It's a device made out of wood. It looks like a little canoe. And in there, you have to use water. You wet the wool, and then you have a machine with fingers that straightens the hair of the wool. The wool, by the way, was being brought from Spain because there are not enough sheep in Israel in order to sustain such an industry.
So in the middle of the 16th century, which is long after the expulsion, mm-hmm. Spain was exporting wool to Svad?
That's right. They were not exporting it to Tzfat. They were exporting to the Ottoman Empire because Israel was part of the Ottoman Empire at this time. And by this time, in spite of not being in friendly relations, the Ottoman Empire and Spain, by this time, this is Charles V at this time, they were having commercial relations. And they were also exporting from southern France, by the way. From the strands of wool that have been brought from southern France have been found in Tzfat even today, you know, by examining the DNA of the sheep.
Were any of the, let's call them crypto-Jews, any of the Jews who remained in Spain involved in this commerce?
Apparently, yes. That is the reason the Jews of Tzfat know their cousins in Spain who are crypto Jews by this time, and I asked them if they could provide him with wool, and they said yes, we can provide with as much wool as you wish. That's why the Ottoman authorities favored this activity. It was industrial. This wasn't a carding of wool at an industrial size.
So when did Svad reach its peak of economic development?
In the 16th century, they became the city with the biggest contributions to the Ottoman Empire taxes, when you talk about taxes, because they were producing and reselling this carded wool to Europe to make clothes.
And what implications did this economic development have?
The implications that they allowed the Sephardic community in Tzfat to introduce yeshivot and to build synagogues at an enormous rate. And there were so many yeshivot at the time. Most of them, most of the yeshivot, were Kabbalistic. They all came, the people, the population, were from the areas from where the Kabbalah developed. The Kabbalah developed, first of all, in Catalonia and in Provence, which at some time were one country, Catalonia and Provence, and from Aragon. We know that from the names of the synagogues, simple as that, the synagogue of the Catalonians, the synagogues of the Aragonenses.
And who were some of the people who were involved in this?
The most famous names are Joseph Caro, Yosef Karo is the person who wrote the Shulchan Aruch, which is a book on halacha, which is the most comprehending book written on halacha, on halachic matters. This is not Kabbalistic. This is halacha, and from that he differs from the other persons, famous persons living in Tzfat at the time. And there were other people like Moshe Cordovero, obviously from Cordova, and Israel from Najara, more in Spanish, Najara, which is in La Rioja. And then there is who wrote Lejado Di, you know, the famous song that you sing on Fridays before the Shabbat service. And then there is also Moshe Alkavitz, who wrote lots of poetry, and what is called Payetan. It was a Payetan in Sephardic lingo.
So this is all in the 16th century. Mm-hmm. How did Sephard develop after that, and what is it like now?
It was like a splendor that lasted for 50 or 60 years. At the beginning of the 17th century, Bedouins and Druze, having heard of the richness of Tzfat, they attacked the town and sacked it. Both Bedouins and both Druze. And the population was dispersed since then all over the Galilee, including Tiberias, which was the closest. Tiberias is less than an hour from Tzfat.
Less than an hour now, probably more than an hour in those days.
At that time, maybe it was a 5-hour horse ride.
So what happened after that in Tzfat?
Tzfat decayed economically, both in population, but in the number of yeshivot, both in the number of synagogues. And they moved to another places in the Galilee, where there were some Mozarab Jews. So they moved to places like Tiberia, where there were Mozarabs, to Kfar Yassif, to Pekin, and they mixed with the Mozarabs. And the glory of Tzfat lasted for only 50 or 60 years.
And what is Tzfat like now?
Tzfat right now, it is, ironically, it's known for its yeshivas, but in this case, they are Ashkenazi yeshivas who have completely invaded the town, and have changed its character. The old Spanish quarter was destroyed in 1834 by an earthquake, and it never recovered since then. And today you see many yeshiva bochers walking around the city. You don't see Sephardim.
You're talking about ultra-Orthodox.
Yes, I'm talking about the ultra-Orthodox. And if there are any Sephardic Jews today, usually the Taimanim, the Yemenites, who have established themselves in Tzfat.
What attracted the Ashkenazi Jews to Tzfat?
The very fact that these people were leaders on halachic fields, like Yosef Karo. Yosef Karo is big among the Ashkenazi synagogues. He is not Kabbalistic. And then the Kabbalistic names that people Tzfat in the 16th century. And then all the Talmudic names of Talmudic Chachamim, you know, the Chacham, the wise man who lived around Tzfat in the Talmudic period, the 4th, 5th, 6th, 6th century. So it is already known to be populated by Jews as far as the 6th century. What happened in the 6th century? The invasion of Muslims invaded the country in the 6th century. Sorry, 7th century.
So aside from this ultra-Orthodox population, who else lives in Tzfat now, and what do they do?
Russian Olim from Russia. Russian new immigrants. So we hear a lot of Hebrew, Yiddish, and Russian accented Hebrew. in the street of Tzfat. And there is a big hospital, which is the major hospital in northern Israel, biggest hospital.
And what kind of economic activity is there now?
There is not much industrial activity. There is commercial activity.
It's an attractive place for tourism too, isn't it?
It is very much. It is a tourist center, not only because of the Talmudic and Halachic and Kabbalistic past, but because he has a artist quarter, beautiful one. People who work the glass painting, regular paintings, and cloth arts.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
Yes, Tzfat is very pretty. The ancient part of Tzfat is very pretty. It's white. The houses are painted in white and blue, light blue. It is as if all the houses were painted in the color of the flag of Israel, in blue and white. And it's very pretty.
I imagine that the climate is different from a lot of other parts of Israel.
Yes, it is very cold. And in the winter, it always snows. And every time in the winter, the hospital is isolated. And since you cannot stop a hospital, you have to bring the personnel in armored personnel carriers with chains. You know, the army has to get into the scene and bring the nurses from Rosh Pina, which is about half an hour away from Tzfat. In armored personal carriers. It's a scene that is shown every year in the television.
Do you have any idea what the population is now, Tzfat?
Today has more or less 30,000, 40,000. Tzfat is also surrounded by few of those little towns populated by Mozarab Jews. A few towns are still existing, even today they are modern, of course, they are not Mozarab, but you can still find surnames of Arab surnames, which are the Mozarab names, and not Jewish names, which are Sephardic or Ashkenazi names.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner @RadioSephirod.com. See you next week.